Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, let's go. If you were paying attention to the Bulls games this weekend, you may have heard an unfamiliar voice, but a good one. And I wanted to introduce and kind of, I guess, reintroduce to Chicago. We'll get into that in just a second. But Andy Demetra is going to be doing three games for the Bulls this year. I thought he was great this past weekend. We have a mutual friend in common. So I thought that I'd reach out and let you get to know him a little bit. And now Andy joins me here on The Score. Andy, so I thank you so much for being on the show, man. Congratulations on getting an opportunity to call Bulls games.
Yeah, thank you, Lawrence. It was a real thrill. I grew up in the western suburbs, and my childhood basically coincided with the Michael Jordan years. So to have that opportunity to pitch in for Neil a couple of times this past weekend and once more in March, it's really a thrill and honor.
So March 1st will be the next time you get an opportunity to call a game, unless they say, hey, maybe we need another game taken out for Neil.
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to that, but for now, my other scheduled game is March 1st, the next time the Bulls swing into Atlanta.
Okay, very cool. So I'd love to know, how does this all go about? Because that thing happened kind of quickly where we had heard that Neil was going to cut back on his schedule a little bit, and I'm sure that there are tons of Bulls fans that grew up across the country that are now doing broadcasting somewhere else that were jumping for the opportunity to get it done. So how did it work for you, and how did you end up in the chair?
Well, I'm very fortunate, Lawrence, to have developed a relationship over the past decade or so with Chuck Swirsky. He's been a real great confidant of mine and a colleague in this business. And so when I read, like everybody else, that Neil would be cutting back on his road schedule, that the Bulls would need a handful of broadcasters to sub in for him, I first contacted Chuck and told him, hey, what can I do to gain some consideration for a couple of those slots? I've been down here in the Southeast for all of my professional career, but I'm born and raised in Chicago. And as you know, when you're born and raised somewhere, that place never leaves you. You always have that soul of Chicago in you. So Chuck was very gracious in connecting me with the people in the Bulls. Obviously, that promised me nothing, but I was able to reach out to them and show them some of my materials and what I've been up to down here in Atlanta, and prior to that, Columbia, South Carolina. Was very fortunate to get a call back from them and continue the conversation. And as you know, working in this business, Lawrence, sometimes your greatest ability is availability. And it just so happened that Georgia Tech was playing Virginia Tech in football on a Thursday. Neil was going to be missing the games in Charlotte and Atlanta the following day in 2 days. And it just so happened my schedule lined up, and they were very gracious to allow me the chance to fill in for Neil. And, of course, I jumped at that opportunity.
So when you walk into the arena in Charlotte and you realize that you're going to be on the call, and it hits you, you sit down next to Stacey King, how did you feel when you put on the headset and you know this is going to be my game?
I'll tell you how I felt when I was sitting next to Stacey King, Lawrence. Comically small.
You know, no doubt.
Stacey's 6'10", and I think we had a great laugh over it because the Bulls, being very kind, they wanted to tweet a picture of me and Stacey to introduce me to the Bulls fans who would be tuning in that night. But I had the misfortune of them taking the picture with Stacey in the foreground, and so I look even smaller than I am. And I'm 5'9 and 170, but next to Stacey with the camera angle, I looked like a leprechaun. So we had a great laugh over that. So that was the first thought of sitting beside Stacey. But, you know, definitely it hit me when we were taping the open to the show on Friday, and the game aired on WGN. You see that opening animation for WGN Sports, and you see the picture of Harry Carey, and you see the collage of Jack Brickhouse and Hawk Harrelson, and they're splicing in some of their great calls that aired on WGN. it really knocks you back for a second, because I was that kid who grew up watching WGN, watching Tom Doerr, Wayne Larrabee, and Johnny Redkerb call Bulls games, watching it in my kitchen growing up. And to know that in about an hour's time, I would have that opportunity to broadcast for my hometown team on really my hometown station, that's about as high a goal as I'd set for myself professionally. And to know that I was going to realize that, it definitely calmed me for a moment. But at the same time, you got a job to do, and you want to deliver the best quality product you can for Bulls fans. I know firsthand how high their standards are, because I am a Bulls fan. And so any kind of thoughts that I had for that, it was quickly erased by your focus on getting the job done and making sure that you delivered a product that met Bulls fans and WGN standards.
Talking with Andy Demetra, you heard him on the Bulls games this weekend in Charlotte and in Atlanta. He's going to have another game on March 1st, calling on the TV side along with Stacey King. This is a Hinsdale Central, right?
I was the Red Devil. You're right.
All right, I don't want to get that wrong, because I know how people are out there, that you can't get the high schools wrong on that. And, you know, if I had said Downers Grove South, I know that you would have been furious about that. But when did you know that you had this bug, that you wanted to do this for a living?
Man, honestly, Lawrence, I'd have to even go before I even was aware of what play-by-play was. I always loved, I guess, words, as weird as that sounds. I used to love writing stories on my family's computer. My mom, who's a teacher, gave me, at about 7 or 8 years old, a paperback copy of a Roget's College Thesaurus, which is just absurd to think about, that there was this 8-year-old kid who was diving into a thesaurus and was mesmerized that there were all these words out there that could more vividly capture what was on my mind. And so when I discovered play-by-play, it made total sense to me why it would appeal to me, because now my job as a broadcaster consists, especially on the radio, of finding more vivid ways to describe things that are in front of me. And so once I got into sports, and once I grasped what play-by-play was, watching Wayne Larrabee, Tom Doerr, listening to Jim Durham and Neil Fung call Bulls games, I knew then that that's what I wanted to make a career out of, and sort of set my path from there.
So you mentioned a few names throughout our conversation. Who else would you say goes on the list of broadcasters that inspired you?
Gosh, definitely Neil. And I'm not just saying that because I had the opportunity to sit in for him these two games last weekend. But Neil was the guy during the heyday of the Bulls championship years, called those games on the radio. I probably wore out my family's VHS tapes of the Bulls national champion, the Bulls NBA title videos, with his calls laced over the top of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen highlights. He was definitely one of the soundtracks of my childhood. I think anybody in my generation grew up, whether they were Cubs fans or not, listening to Harry Carey, Hawk Harrelson, and Tom Pachorik on the Sox. Those are the people whose voices kind of echo in my head when I think back to being a young sports fan in Chicago. And I think once you begin your journey professionally and you start to check out different broadcasters across the country, their styles, there are a few guys that you certainly latch on to. Kevin Calabro was a big influence on me, a former play-by-play voice of the Sonics. He now does television for the Blazers. I always loved his descriptive flair for basketball. And I got to go back to a guy I mentioned earlier, Chuck Swirsky. He's the guy that I just love listening to as a pure fan of the craft. And I love his passion, the way he prepares for games and how he delivers and rises to the moment. He's been a great, like I said, confidant for me professionally, but also somebody after whom I take a lot of influence, for sure.
When you mentioned getting the thesaurus when you were younger, I immediately went to Doc Emmerich, because I feel like that guy uses a thesaurus as well as anyone in our business.
Yeah, he's great. And it's funny watching him and listening to him call the Stanley Cup Finals. Listening to him call hockey, I think, has made me a better basketball broadcaster. Because when you hear somebody from a different sport, a different discipline, describe things in a way that you maybe hadn't thought about before, you can take that and borrow that and incorporate it into your own call for your sport. And so Doc has been amazing in just hearing how vivid and varied he makes his calls. And it kind of forces you to be more creative in your thinking of how you want to describe a certain action on the floor for basketball. So you're right, Doc, I think, is as good as it gets as far as how rich his reservoir of words are. And that's certainly something that I aspire to in basketball for me.
you've been in ACC and SEC country, doing stuff for South Carolina, working for Georgia Tech. What's different about calling games down there, and how accepting were fans of that area realizing that you don't talk like they do?
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I got a great story. So this was about my fourth or fifth year at South Carolina. It was move-in weekend there, and I'm in line at a Starbucks, and I overhear a conversation between two families behind me. They're both from Chicagoland. One was from Arlington Heights, the other was from Lake Zurich. And so me, you know, trying to be cordial, I turn around and go, oh, you guys are from Chicagoland? I'm from Chicago, too. I'm originally from Oak Brook. I work down here. Without missing a beat, one of the girls who was a student in South Carolina said, wow, I never would have guessed with that southern accent you have. So apparently to the folks in South Carolina, I still have a Chicago accent, but to the folks in Chicago, I now have a southern accent. I'm not quite sure how that all evolved over time.
So is your family telling you that?
No, I don't think anybody does. And it's funny, when I first came to South Carolina, people used to get on me for what they perceived to be this pronounced Chicago accent. And I'm thinking, well, I mean, I might have a little bit of a Chicago accent, but I think it's fairly neutral. I pop in a recording of me from my first few years down in South Carolina, and I'm like, man, I really had a Chicago accent. So I could kind of see where they were coming from. You know, in South Carolina, they're very passionate. They're very loyal. And I definitely understood how they perceived me as an interloper when I first came down there. But I think you realize this no matter where you work, Lawrence, whether you grew up and work in a market or whether you go into a market brand new, you just show people every day how much you care and how hard you're willing to work for them. And over time, I think they'll embrace your idiosyncrasies. They'll welcome you as if you're one of their own. And I was very fortunate to have developed a strong relationship with the fans down in South Carolina. They were incredibly welcoming to me over time, and very enthusiastic about the product that we put on the air for them. So I was by no means a native South Carolinian, but I think over time they accepted me, no matter how strong my Chicago accent might have been.
And with Georgia Tech football is fascinating to me because they can go out and win a game where they only pass one time. They can destroy, they can roll a team by only throwing the ball one time. What's it like to be around that, and how do Georgia Tech fans, how do they feel about the style of play that Paul Johnson has brought down there?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating offense to watch week in and week out. And you mentioned not even completing a pass. That was our case last Thursday when we played at Virginia Tech. We had 465 rushing yards and zero passing yards, which is great for Virginia Tech because they were near the bottom nationally at pass defense, so at least it improved their average. I think you gain an appreciation for the nuance of it and just the subtle adjustments that Paul Johnson is able to make, where it seems like you're seeing the same play snap after snap, but there are just these subtle tweaks here and there that allow them to break off big runs. And it's a very cerebral offense, and people sometimes mistake it for being this plodding, deliberate offense that's dull, and all you're going to see are four-yard runs. There are nights, like the Virginia Tech game, where, yeah, that's the case, but it also can be a very big play offense. And I think that's what's cool about it, is seeing this team that's composed of guys who might not be 4 and 5 stars, who are more academically oriented coming to Georgia Tech, and they're staring down these rosters like with Virginia Tech that are flush with high 3 and 4 star players, and they don't have an answer for them. And so you really do admire and appreciate it, and how it can equalize things for a school like Georgia Tech. Definitely keeps you on your toes as a broadcaster. You sometimes get deked out yourself when you're trying to track the football, but it's a very cool offense to watch once you're immersed in it.
Spending a few more minutes with Andy Demetra, he called some of the Bulls games this past weekend. We'll have another Bulls game on March 1st. All right, so you saw the Bulls up close. You were there doing play-by-play. What do you think of where they're at, and what should Bulls fans be excited about?
Well, I'll tell you this, Lawrence. I know that the Bulls team that I'm going to call with Stacey March 1st in Atlanta is going to be completely different than the Bulls team I called this past Saturday in Atlanta, because they have so many major rotation guys out. And so you kind of take their personnel right now with a grain of salt. I really like Zach LaVine's ability to get everybody involved in the offense, to be impactful without searching for his shots. That's a point that Stacey made, and you can kind of see that unfold in the games in Charlotte and Atlanta. I like that with these injuries, it's created opportunities for some of the guys on the bench to find their niche. You look at what Archie Diacono did against Atlanta. He seized control of that fourth quarter. He's a guy whose opportunity might not have come had it been for not been for some of those injuries that Chicago had to suffer early in the year. And so I think you just like to see the effort. I know that Friday was not a banner night for them defensively in Charlotte, but they turned that around and showed great effort positioning defensively to get the W in Atlanta. So you just have to have a little bit of patience and really appreciate how they are able to patch things together and still find offense in a league that is so skewed now towards offense and missing so much firepower right now that they're still able to cobble it together. I really like Levine, though. I think he's going to be a good player. You forget that he's 23 years old, but he has a lot of skills and still a lot of explosiveness and bounce that's going to make him a highlight waiting to happen every night.
Yeah, if there's one thing we figured out through the first few games of the season, Zach LaVine is an NBA scorer for sure. Like that, yeah, you don't have to question it anymore. You don't have to worry about, well, how's his knee going to respond and all that stuff. That guy is a high flyer and can score buckets.
Exactly. And to be top five in the NBA in scoring right now and to be in the top 10, at least entering the weekend in free throw attempts per game, that shows you that he's attacking the basket and that he trusts that knee. And you watch him up close like Stacey and I did in Atlanta. He's got burst and he's got bounce, and that ought to make Bulls fans very excited.
What's your approach to dealing with a new color analyst? Because you have to kind of juggle this, whether it's in South Carolina or at Georgia Tech. And now you walk in and it's Stacey King. So how do you find your rhythm with a new guy?
That's a great point. I just wanted to be a good caretaker for the broadcast in my two games this past weekend. I didn't want to get myself over or anything like that. As far as developing a rapport with Stacey, you just talk basketball with the guy, you know, and you watch enough games, you understand how he likes to handle the ends of plays and break things down, and you make sure that you defer to the man in the chair next to you. But Stacey and I really had a lot of fun working together. I love bouncing things off of him and leaning into his expertise. And he couldn't have been more welcoming along with the rest of the Bulls organization for those two games I joined them. Stacey was great to work with, great fun. I enjoyed my conversations with him off air as much as on air. And I think once you start having that flow of conversation with somebody, you develop that rapport. And I think that chemistry can cross over to the games themselves.
Well, Andy, I appreciate the time, man. Congratulations. And I thought that you did a great job. I was I had nothing going on Saturday night. I was sitting there kind of flipping back and forth, and I was like, oh, yeah, Andy's doing the Bulls game. Let me check it out. And I thought you did a great job. It was very comfortable. You would have never known that it was someone completely new to the broadcast that was in there. So I just wanted to introduce you to everyone back here at home and let you know that I thought you did a terrific job with it.
Well, Lawrence, I appreciate that. That means a lot. And you can be sure to count down those days until March 1st. And I'm excited to finally get to call the game with Markkanen on the floor and Dunn and Portis and Valentine. And I know Bulls fans are excited to see those guys back. And I can't wait to paint the pictures with those guys on the floor as well.
All right. So let's mark it down. At the last week of February, you come back on the show and we'll talk Bulls Hawks.
You know, I am a true broadcaster, Lawrence. You notice me shamelessly plugging an upcoming broadcast, right?
I think that's well done, sir, and I appreciate you doing it. And thanks a lot for being on the show.
Thank you so much. And in the meantime, I can't wait to listen to Neil and Stacey. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It is going to be a lot of fun. Andy, thanks a lot, man. Be well.
Thank you, Lawrence. Appreciate it.
It's Andy Demetra. You can hear him occasionally do Bulls games like this past weekend, and he's got the Bulls-Hawks game on March 1st. I'm glad that we had a chance to connect and you had a chance to hear them. We'll take a break. We'll get back into a little bit of Bears conversation next here on The Score. So glad that you have stuck with us on this rainy night. We are here at Dirty Nelly's. I think Dirty Nelly's closes at 10. So I'm seeing people like, only Mondays? Okay, so Monday nights they close at 10. All right, so you can still come in here and get yourself a Miller Lite if that's what you want to do. Hang out here for a little bit. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Andy. I enjoyed talking with him. It was good. It's going to be fun. Like there's been a good crew of guys doing the games. You know how I feel about Adam Amin. I think he's fantastic. you talk about a guy who felt real comfortable, like a real comfortable listen immediately. Adam was just on it. And then I thought that Andy did a great job too. So we've been lucky to have Neil Funk as people who watch Bulls basketball. We've been very lucky to have him. And there are a lot of broadcasters who have grown up in this town that have pieces of that. I know that I do it and a foul all the time. I do it all the time. So seeing someone who grew up listening to it like Andy and get an opportunity to do it, same thing with Adam, it's great. I think it's really, really great. I have some suggestions for some other people that they should add, but they already have their crew of people.
My guy Wayne Randazzo.
Is he doing one of the games?
No, but he should be at it.
Well, I felt like whether it's Wayne or Zach, I feel like both of those guys would rock the microphone for sure. And the thing is, here's the thing about Zach. Zach's great calling basketball. He's gotten pretty good calling baseball. He's great calling basketball. Same thing with Benetti. I love Benetti calling White Sox games. I really love him calling basketball games on radio. On radio, because he's so good at painting the picture for you that you can see it, even though you're listening to it. And that's what you want from a play-by-play guy. And I now have found myself drawn to play-by-play guys on television that do radio calls. And what I mean by that is if you're doing a TV call, the pictures can help tell the story, so you don't have to be as descriptive. If you've got a good analyst, it makes it very easy. But that's one of the things I like about Doc Emmerich. If you're watching Doc Emmerich, you are watching a guy who's giving you a radio call. He doesn't have to do that. He's Doc damn Emmerich. He doesn't have to give you as thorough of a call as he's giving you. But he does it. And I think that it makes for a better broadcast. But I'm kooky that way. I really liked it for the wild card game. I was really happy that there was a StatCast option. And that's what I found myself watching. Like, no diss to the Sunday night crew, because I've enjoyed them for most of the year. But Benetti was doing the StatCast, and it gave me something that I, as a baseball fan, kind of like. I didn't even feel like they hit you over the head with it. I thought they did a great job of giving you the objective, and then they had Eduardo in there, so he gave you some of the subjective while you were watching it. I was very, very, very impressed with that broadcast. So I hope that more places do that. I actually think that it makes sense to, if you have the platforms to do it, if you have an extra station, if you're Fox and you have Fox Sports 1, why not put another broadcast that might draw people who are not interested in hearing Joe Buck? Not that, I mean, I like Joe, but if you wanted to do another experimental broadcast, you could. I said this when we were talking about NFL Network. I don't know why the NFL Network carries the simulcast of Thursday Night Football. What they should do is, since they have all those experts, they should have us watching them watching the game and how they react to it. Now, I'll tell you this much, the place where I work on television, NBC Sports Chicago, we're now doing that. Now, we can't show you the game because we don't have rights to it, but for the third quarter, you're in the room with me, Alex, Lance, and Matt. And it's so fun. It's so fun because people get to interact with them as if they're watching the game with them. So I don't know why more outlets don't do that. They need to do that a little bit more. But Zach's had a nice couple, few weeks off now with the Cubs exiting early. But I'm sure he's getting ready for DePaul basketball. And there's going to be a Max Strus dunk, and he's going to go all crazy, and it's going to be great. So if you haven't, I don't know how interested you are in DePaul basketball. And at this point, I would understand if you weren't. But the one great thing about DePaul basketball is Zach does an incredible call. And it'll be him and Dave Corzine for most of the year this year, which I also think is tremendous. So, Herbie, how are we coming along on our college basketball show?
Got two of the four that we're targeting right now. I don't think we included the two that we did last year from the Big Ten, Illinois and Northwestern, as yet.
Oh, yeah, we can get Underwood on. I thought that interview with him was really good, although maybe he doesn't want to talk about some of the stuff.
Yeah,
we'll see.
For the most part, everybody has gotten back to me. Two guys have committed two times, and then the other one is other two are still figuring out when the coach can be available.
Are we going to try to get Valpo on and give him? It's Matt Lotich, right? Lotich?
Yeah, local guy. But I made the decision last year, because not really local and not in Illinois, so no.
Yeah, but it's here's the thing with Valpo. It's in the Valley. It's closer than Illinois State or Illinois. I'm just saying.
Like, when I tried to text him last year to try to get him on, no one came back and said, hey, yeah, I'm good for that.
Well, maybe Adam Amin can help us out with that. He's a Valpo guy.
They'll have to come to me instead of me going to them. And like I'm saying, I put in Valpo, then I'll get people saying, well, why don't you put in Perdomo? Why don't you put in Notre Dame? I'm like, no. We're going too far.
Well, the host has some very strong feelings about Purdue because the same type of deal where we tried desperately to get Purdue on and they didn't have time for the sports radio station in Chicago. So it's fine. I'm more than willing to give that airtime to another Big Ten school that might want to be active in the recruiting base of Chicago. More than willing to. But hey, Valpo people, tell your folks at Valpo that we'd like to have your head coach on the Score and tell them to hit Herbie up and get in touch with them. Be tweeting us.
My email is right on my Twitter.
A text says Loyola's in the Valley. Yeah, we're aware.
We got him on last year, guy.
Yeah, I'm saying Valpo is in the Valley, and we have Valley coaches on all the time. So we're going to have another one with Dan Muller. So, but yes, we're very much aware that Loyola is in the Missouri Valley Conference. We appreciate the text messages. Just saying.
No, we're going to ignore Loyola this year.
No, so we're going to go the other way?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to be hipster college basketball fans?
Yeah, we're like, we accepted Loyola before they were in the Final Four.
Well, we were. I mean, we were. We were the only people outside of Mully, because Mully's a Loyola graduate. So it was like me with DePaul. But outside of that, we're the only people we were talking about Loyola in December. Like we had Porter on in November, and we were talking about them, like doing topics on Loyola in December.
I remember Tony and I went to the game, and we're like, man, they're killing Samford. This team is going to be good. We didn't know what they're going to be, like a tournament team, but they were killing Stanford. Not Stanford, Sam Ford.
Sam Ford? Who is he playing for? But it was after their win down in Florida that we spent some time talking about them. And I'm happy for Loyola. I truly am. And I feel like it should put pressure on DePaul. It should. Because look at what Porter's built. I'm kind of mad that they're not in the top 25 either. That bugs me. Talking about a Final Four team, and I know that they lost some players, but they also returned like the conference player of the year. How are you not ranked after that? That's just bizarre. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. Like, that's the one good thing about college basketball is that you can play your way in. We'll get there, and then, you know, you'll have to deal with us. But they won't be surprising, folks. Texter says, get Iowa on. Nah, no, thank you. I don't think their coach is interested in talking to us either.
He'll yell at us.
I'm not sure I'm that interested in talking to him. This segment being brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. Yeah, our Iowa quota is filled. We've got Anthony Heron on. We'll ask him about Iowa basketball. We'll get Anthony's wife on. She was an athlete at Iowa. She's got thoughts, I would imagine. That'll be one of the segments. And then that'll be that. And then we'll be done. And I know that Herbie's not going to let me get Konzo Martin on the show.
Well,
is that
going to
happen?
Well, we got to pay, right?
Oh. So
well,
petty.
And also we got to, like, go to Illinois, and then he'll, like, we'll decommit from Illinois and go there and get paid. They have literally three former Illinois commits on their team right now.
Hey, man, the what's that thing called? The border thing that you guys
it's called
play?
Bragging
Rights game?
Yeah, Illinois got five on it.
Wow. Are you guys going to win this year?
Yeah, I said after the game's over, they're going to change that city from St. Louis, Missouri to Six Losses, Missouri.
You are terrible with the puns and the petty tonight. Six Losses, Missouri. It's really the one thing that you really go in on, which is fun for me. It makes me laugh every time. But that Illinois-Missouri thing for Herbie is a big, big deal. So, yeah, we're going to try to get as many of the local coaches on as possible. I don't even know. Who's coaching Chicago State now?
One of the Irvins.
Oh, that's right. Is it Monty?
We're going to look it up real quick.
I mean, that's a whole new start that they got going on down on 95th Street. Maybe we should reach out there, too. See how things can change.
I know Chris Zorge is the AD there.
Yeah.
It might be. I know it's not Mike. We're trying to
you
look
know
it
it's
up.
It's not Michael Irvin?
Yeah. Well, Mike Irvin, not Michael. Not that. We keep on getting a firewall. Somebody's going to tweet it in or text it in. But
that's
yeah,
not good.
It's one of the Irvins from the Mac Irvin Fire thing.
Yeah, we can't have – come on. Come on, Chicago State. You can't be – you got to update stuff for us. You can't be out there like that. Is it Lance Irvin?
It is Lance Irvin.
Okay, so it's Lance Irvin. All right, well, we'll make sure that we do that correction. We'll get Lance on the show at some point. I guess I'm excited for college basketball. I always like when we talk with the coaches because they're all – very different, but also the same. But I like the different flavor. Like, Dan Muller is, like, so cool. Like, he's so laid back. And, you know, Dave's fairly buttoned up, and then occasionally we get him to laugh, and he, we get a little bit of that from Dave. Porter is, like, a ball of energy. Whenever we have him on, it's well, I want to go play for Porter now. Whenever we have him on. And I like Steve McClain, man, from UIC. That dude is intense as hell. He's so intense, and I love it. And they built a nice little program over there on the near west side. So we promise that next week we will bring you some college basketball with the local coaches in the area. I'm waiting for the contingent. Yeah, Herbie, you didn't even stump for Western. That's your school. You didn't even stump for them.
I was only there for like 3 months.
All right. Well, that's fair.
And they're not good at basketball.
You don't know. They might. Is that the Summit League? Is that the league that they're in? The Summit?
That sounds right.
Sure. It's fine.
When
it's
I was there,
it was South Dakota.
It was like the MidCon. I think it just changed to that name, and they made all the schools go west.
Well, yeah, they got, like, all the Dakota schools, and it's usually South Dakota and South Dakota State
yeah,
that are
North
pretty
Dakota
good in basketball.
Nebraska, Omaha.
Yeah.
I think
isn't that
IPFW
Zach,
in there.
Zach Miller went?
Yeah, that sounds
that's where
right.
Zach Miller went. I'm happy he's walking around and everything seems to be okay. Zach, you don't have to worry about playing football ever again, brother. Just come pick up a microphone because we know you're going to be good at it. Don't worry. I mean, keep collecting that check as long as they're going to give it to you, but you don't need to worry about getting back on the field. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Julie DeCaro, get you ready for her show. Oh, did I do this? Did I do the bottom of the hour? All right, I'll do it right now. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Over the last 25 years, the Chicago Wolves have stayed true to their mission of providing winning hockey at affordable prices. Don't miss out on this special 25th anniversary season. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for a schedule and ticket information. We'll talk with Julie next here on The Score. We are finishing up here at Dirty Nelly's in Palatine, and we thank them for having us out here. Thanks to Miller Lite. Thanks to Lance Briggs, who's out here as well. Yeah, every night we get the opportunity, whenever we get a full show, we end it by talking with our friend Julie DeCaro, who will be on after I'm done at 10 o'clock. What's up, Jules?
Hello.
I saw you getting into the conversation with Lance today, like throwing questions out on Twitter. It's appreciated.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm in my car and I'm, you know, there's no one to talk to. And I hear, you know, you, and I'd like to think that Lance is more than an acquaintance. So, you know, I wanted to sit with the cool kids for a while.
Well, he always willing to answer you and or Maggie's questions that you guys have. And you guys do shows together with Lance, so it's always nice when you have questions and stuff. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I want to get back to the Captain Marvel thing that I brought up.
Go ahead.
I really agree with Lance. Like, she's not like a superhero that I was like even aware of, I don't think, like as a kid. And I keep trying to get into it and everyone keeps yelling at me for not supporting a woman superhero and stuff. But I really wanted the Black Widow movie. I don't really care about Captain Marvel.
Ooh. Well, I mean, I get it. If it's not something that you grew up with, it's hard to get excited about it.
Like, I also feel like the casting is a little dry.
Oh, okay. So
can I say that?
Break that down for me. Sure. No, well, I mean, you said it. I didn't say it.
I know. I'm going to get killed for it. Why don't you support women?
So what is it about it? Like, is there someone else that you would have preferred?
I mean, I would have preferred the Black Widow movie. That's what I was really waiting for.
No, but I'm saying if you didn't like the casting, was there someone else that you thought might have?
Yeah, probably.
Not that we know what type of job that Brie is going to do, but she's a fantastic actress.
I know, but I just don't think she's that kind of actress. I think that for Marvel movies, you need to be a little bit campy, a little bit goofy. Like, I just don't see that from her. And I don't see that in the trailer at all.
What's interesting is that if we turn back the clock, I thought that the casting of Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark was perfection, but I don't know if I ever thought of him as heroic. You know, like, I felt like he could be Tony Stark. I wasn't 100% convinced that he could be Iron Man, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's, I get it.
So maybe she'll surprise you.
Maybe. I mean, I'll see it. I'm just way more excited for, like, you know, Spider-Man and stuff than that.
Okay. Why don't you support women, though?
I know, I don't. I don't support women at all.
Man, what the hell, Jules?
I know.
Meanwhile, you got poor Tony out there watching movies and so how did it go? Because I didn't get a chance to hear it. How did Tony's review of A Star Is Born go?
His review, I need to turn him on to some Roger Ebert to read, because his review was less of a review than sort of a recap. So his review took like 30 minutes. But I mean, it was worth it.
You put a quarter in the content machine that is Tony.
Yep.
And the way that I feel is that now that Tony's out covering games and he's becoming a little bit famous now and he's on, you know, CLT sports page and all that stuff, I think that he has now toned down his hot takes when it comes to sports, because now he understands that there's a responsibility that goes with some of that opinion, and that he has to see people when he says crazy stuff, and that they might not like all the crazy stuff that he says because it's crazy. And I think that where that hot take reservoir is now being filled with all the stuff that isn't sports.
I'll say his thoughts on
A Star Is Born, for example.
He was so afraid that by doing A Star Is Born, people were going to not take him seriously as a basketball analyst, whatever he is, reporter, that he made me, in between every few minutes of his review, we had to stop and talk about the Bulls. So that's it was ridiculous. Just this. It was just this incredible mishmash of thoughts coming from Tony's head on a variety of topics. And people on the text line were like, I just tuned in. I cannot figure out what you're talking about. It's like A Star Is Born and then the Bulls and then back to A Star Is Born. But that's the way it went.
Okay, I would not have produced the segment that way. And from now on, when you have Tony do a movie review, we're not doing that. He's just going to talk. He's going to give us his horrible take on the movie. I still haven't seen A Star Is Born. Do I need to see it?
I don't think you need to see
no,
it.
No, you're good.
Well, he also spoiled the ending. He told everyone the ending, just blurted it out.
He didn't even give you a spoiler alert?
Well, he gave a spoiler alert at the beginning, but then this was like 30 minutes later that he just blurts out the ending. So I don't know that the spoiler alert still applied. I felt like it needed to be re-upped.
Jeez, Tony. Always with this kid.
He
Always.
Died at the end.
Okay, that's enough. That is enough from you, sir, on that particular topic.
They made like Jules. Four of those, though. You should know.
Yeah.
Does he die in all of them? I don't know. I've never seen any of them.
It's fine. It's I felt like Tony went into the movie with a bad attitude.
Oh, he totally did.
I follow him on Instagram, and he was just dreading it. And my whole thing is, if someone bought my ticket to a movie and bought me popcorn, I'd be really excited to go to the movie no matter what the movie was. Unless it's scary.
Here's the best part. He dressed to see the movie, so he wore like a scarf. Like, he looked real arty going into it. He wasn't like typical Tony Gill gear.
Wait a minute. He didn't just put on like a sweatsuit and go?
No, he had like a knit scarf wrapped around his neck, and he was like Mr. like arty reviewer guy.
Did you have on a beret too, Tony?
I couldn't find raspberry? One.
A loaf of bread under one arm.
I couldn't find one. I was definitely going to do it, and I couldn't find my glasses. So yeah, I just wore just my hat and a knit scarf.
I love the idea of like Tony with a beret and a baguette going into
like a Breton shirt, striped shirt. Tony, I have like 50 berets. I wear them all winter long. I could have lent you one.
This is so great. And like the what is it? The long cigarette holder.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
That's what he's got to go in wearing director's pants and a beret. And have a bag. I don't know why we just made Tony French, but apparently that's what we did. We're like, let's throw every French stereotype out there
why not?
And have Tony go to the movies and see. Do you have plans to send him to another movie?
Oh, definitely.
See, I'm trying to figure out, like, I want to, there's so much stuff that he has to catch up on.
Well,
I feel like I need to have a day where he comes over and watches like Predator. And
but stuff. there's like probably 800 movies that Tony needs to see that he has never seen and doesn't care to see. So when the right movie comes along, I'll know it when I see it. And then, you know, if it goes too long, maybe I'll make him go watch something iconic from the 80s that he needs to see, like Top Secret. Or, you know, something like that that I feel like he really needs to round out his person.
Okay. All right. We got to get a list together.
Yeah. I mean, I'm waiting for maybe the next Nicholas Sparks movie. I feel like that'll be a good one for him. Like, you know, I'll just, when it comes, I'll just know it.
See, there's part of me that there's a little sadistic thing happening on your end, too, there, Julie.
Oh, that's right. Well, listen, okay, I mean, right. I'm a firm Gen Xer, and he's somewhere between millennial and whatever the generation under millennial is, and he basically sits there all the time and tells me how everything I like and loved as a child is stupid. So, yeah, I'm making him see every bad movie I can force him to go to.
Well, let me just, this is where like I do have some sympathy for Tony and a lot of affection for him. So, I always have people over Wildcard Saturday or Sunday. By the way, Julie, you're invited.
Thanks.
And so my wife had pita chips there. And Tony was like, what are these?
What are those?
And then he had them. And he was like, these are great. Why don't I have these all the time? And we said it was so great because for me and Mel, it was like our kid was home from college, And we like packed him up with food and we're like, okay, Tony, you can take this home. And he's like, do you guys have any more of those pita chips? And we're like, yes, you can also go buy them at the store if you want.
That's
so I think that there's some experiences that Tony still needs to have.
Absolutely.
That's
why when he was going to be on Sports Feed, I told everyone to tune in and watch my medium-sized adult son. You know, I can't say large adult son because that's like Kyle Schwarber, but medium-sized adult son, Tony Gill.
Yeah, because you've got a couple of large, almost adult sons at the crib, too. Those boys are getting big, and now they're driving, which is terrifying.
It is terrifying.
Super terrifying. What are you going to do on the show tonight?
We are going to talk Bears with Mark Grody. And then at 11 o'clock, one of my favorite writers, Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic, is going to be here to talk about what went down at Maryland today. We're also going to reveal our Matt Nagy Star Wars Heat Index for this week.
Nice. Great. I'm glad that that is a thing.
I lost the Heat Index. I had to recreate it.
I thought you tweeted it.
Well, I did. But I had to go find it and then copy it back down.
Oh, okay. All right, so we got a new placement.
Yes.
For the Matt Nagy Heat Index.
Yes.
It's good. It's really good.
It's going to be great.
All right, Jules. I appreciate you. I'll see you when I get back to campus.
Okay, take care.
That's Julie DeCaro. Her show is coming up next. Thanks to everyone involved. Thanks to the folks here at Dirty Nellie's for having us out, the city of Palatine. Is Jim Schwann still the mayor out here? Is he still the... No one knows? All right. People in Palatine don't even care. All right, great. Great. Fantastic. Thanks to Spunky Dunkers for the donuts. We appreciate that. Score Promotions did... Jim Schwantz is still the mayor? Okay, good. There's one person who votes in this room. Okay, great. Score Promotions did an incredible job today navigating all sorts of weirdness here, which I appreciate. Shout out to Mike Chen as well. Herbie and Tony did a great job back at the ranch. I'm on again tomorrow at 6 o'clock. As long as this cold doesn't get any worse, I should be on the air before the Bulls game. And I don't know which one will be worse, my cold or their defense. But we'll see. We'll see, because it was pretty bad last night. All right, have a great rest of your night. I'm going to listen to Julie on my way home. I suggest you do the same thing. See you tomorrow at 6 here on The Score.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.